Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gem Studios, and they can be found at starseedgems.com. They are also the proud sponsors of Forever Family Foundation's 7th annual conference, which will be held in San Francisco this November. Tonight's guests are Victor and Wendy Zammit. And if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guests, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. And since we have two very special guests tonight, we will only be going to one commercial break, allowing us more time with Victor and Wendy Zammit. So good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And I am excited about our two esteemed guests. I think the audience will, listening audience will enjoy everything they have to say. They truly are advocates for the afterlife. And I know that you mentioned we'll go straight through after the first break. I'd like to talk. We have that we're getting a lot of inquiries now that we just announced the two events, the grief retreat and the conference. We've already started taking in the reservations. The grief retreat is a pretty, it's unusual. It's not unusual for us, but it's an unusual format. We call it Connections and Healing Between Two Worlds, an afterlife exploration retreat. I mean, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the goal, and I think that the premise of our organization is basically the goal of this afterlife exploration retreat. It's not necessarily only for people who are bereaved, but it will be centered around people who have had losses and are wanting and yearning for those people who have crossed over to the other side. So it's basically workshops, breakouts, little small groups of people that are working with our facilitators in learning different methods and taking home different tools that will allow them to open up and establish a communication directly with their loved ones on the other side.
Yeah, and you know, these we are an all-volunteer organization, and these things do take a lot of planning, and we try to do the best that we can to enhance the experience. And the conference we have every year in November, and that'll be this year, November 9th and 10th, Fran?
9th and 10th.
Yeah, and we have a stellar lineup there. I mean, we're going to have people from various disciplines of research. We're going to have Evan Alexander, the author of Proof of Heaven, Lloyd Auerbach, Stephen Browdy. Dr. Browdy is an expert in psi phenomena and survival, some added surprises at Dr. Tarrant, who'll be actually doing a live experiment, you know, on
our medium.
On our medium. Tom and Lisa Butler of the A-Trans-C, of course, they're experts in EVP and related phenomena. Janet Mayer, who speaks a language that was not known to her before this started occurring. So it's an amazing group of people. We also have two mediums, that certified mediums, Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana, that will be there. And a Friday night optional fundraiser is going to feature Kim Russo, who's the current star of the TV show Haunting, The Haunting of. So if you want more information, you can log on to our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org and learn about those two events. The grief retreat, I might add, you might want to if you plan on going, to make it early, because we are limiting that to a maximum of 50
people. And also with the November conference, we haven't started advertising it or sending out emails or snail mails on it yet, but people are already signing up. So that's another thing to take into consideration. Try and make your plans early. And then the very last thing that's going on is we have our Holidays Past raffle is up. Again, we haven't started publicizing that, but it is up and it's on the website. And you can win up to 5 one-hour medium readings with Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, or Catherine Nadell. And
okay, well, thank you for that. I think now we're going to go to our one and only break for the evening. When we come back, we are going to be honored by talking with Victor Zammit and Wendy Zammit. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770. Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit GriefSong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631 425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guests tonight are Victor and Wendy Zammit. Our sponsor is Starseed Gem Studios, and they can be found at starseedgems.com. They're also the proud sponsors of Forever Family Foundation's 7th annual conference that will be held this year in San Diego this November. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. There are three ways to show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. One, go to Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you might not like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will donate to us each time a card is taken out, and each time that card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,300 online stores, like Cheap Tickets, Drugstore.com, Priceline, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Back to you, Bob.
Well, thank you, and proud to welcome two pillars in the community of afterlife researchers. Dr. Victor Zammit is a retired attorney from Australia. He has several advanced degrees. His partner, Wendy, is an educator, a psychologist, and together they've been researching evidence of an afterlife for more than two decades. They maintain a wonderfully informative website about the afterlife on victorzammit.com, and that's Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R, Zammit, Z-A-M-M-I-T.com. I'd also like to mention on that website that it's very comprehensive, articles, videos, history, reference materials. And if you go on their website and you enter your email to join their newsletter, which is free every Thursday around the same time as this show comes on the air, you will be sent this wonderful weekly newsletter that has an abundance of information that's interesting and videos. Most of all, I'd like to mention that Victor and Wendy have just published their newest book, A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. It's a wonderful book, a very comprehensive book, and when you read through it, there's not much that's going to be left to imagination. The evidence is there, and you're welcome to read about it. Welcome, Victor and Wendy.
Hello, Bob.
Nice. Hello. So nice for you to talk to you again, and I hope you're well.
Hi,
Wendy. I'd like to start off. I know that, as I mentioned, you've been educating the public about evidence of an afterlife for, I guess, you know, several decades now. And when I talk to some researchers, very often there's some sort of a personal reason. I mean, with both of you, was it simply a case of you being curious about what happens after we die, or were you prompted by personal experiences.
So with me, Bob, I in August 1990 it happened. I woke up one morning where the world as I knew it no longer existed, because I was seeing color around people, and things were happening. I was having these psychic experiences I didn't ask for, and especially when, at the time, I used to attend the skeptics meetings every Wednesday night. Huh. And it was just a shock to me, a trauma. And I was seeing Wendy's aura. You know, the colors were so beautiful. I didn't know what to do. But I had to go to the experts to explain to me what was going on. It was so traumatic for me at the time.
Yeah, and Wendy, do you have a similar experience, or were you following Victor's lead?
In this case, I was following Victor's lead, Bob, yeah. I didn't have those kinds of psychic experiences, but I think I'd always had a sort of awareness.
Mm. Now, we mentioned, before, of course, that Victor's experience as an attorney for many years, and I get a lot of enjoyment when Victor challenges the skeptical scientists. I know now I noticed on your latest entry in the website, you put out another challenge, you know, to the skeptics to join you to be cross-examined. So obviously, Victor, your experience as an attorney has aided you in your investigations of survival, has it not?
Oh, absolutely, Bob.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember for many, many, many years, I used to prepare my cases to convince the courts or the jury that sometimes beyond reasonable doubt that what I'm presenting has to be accepted. I had to do my research. I had to select my expert witnesses to substantiate what I was presenting, and that kind of valuable professional experience helped me enormously to prepare my case for the afterlife, that there is an afterlife. Yes, absolutely. The experience as an attorney aided me greatly.
And I've noticed, you have these personal experiences, and you start your investigation, and you find out about all of this extraordinary evidence that's out there that remains hidden. So when you first began to systematically investigate, you know, the afterlife and, you know, survival,
yes,
were you surprised, you know, that such compelling evidence still remained hidden?
In retrospect, yes. Yeah, I can say I was very, very surprised, because, as I said, I belong to the skeptics group. We never talked about anything to do with the paranormal. We never talked, discussed, or debated anything to do with the afterlife. We just, it just didn't exist for us, and we didn't know anything about it. But I believe that there were the powerful forces in the environment determines the perception of the people. For example, I mean, the education system, the media, and even the Christian church at the time was very, very powerful, because it tries to, you know, it's historical. It tried to control the minds and the hearts of the people. And the entertainment, I mean, movies coming from Hollywood, for example. I mean, they're so influential. There was nothing about the afterlife and the paranormal. So it remained hidden from the general public for a long, long time. But, you know, Bob, what was revolutionary was when the Internet came on the scene, because it had no censorship, and things changed radically.
I'd like to come in on that one too, Bob.
Yeah.
We'd been spending many years in university libraries doing research. We both did a master's in history. And I can remember going to the university library and looking for books on the afterlife. And I think I came across one book in the entire university library, which was, I think it was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Under Thanatology. But in those days, the books didn't exist in the university libraries. Then I discovered the Theosophical Society Library, and it was an absolute revelation. We just found all of this incredible research going back 150 years, which, as you say, has been hidden from the general public. And that was one of the reasons that we got started on our website many, many years ago, because we realized that those books were not available in many, many countries. People just did not have access to that information, and we really felt a huge obligation to share this knowledge with people whose access to information was censored.
You know, I totally understand what you say, and because I know we get calls here all the time from people like in certain areas that are conservative and have a lot of religious a lot of religious dogma that prevents them from even discussing these things, and it's almost a whisper on the phone because they're afraid. You know, and I know that you both talk about that a lot. I mean, there's a tremendous difference between religion and spirituality. Religion's at the core. I guess they were intended to connect one with a greater force. But the dogma sometimes, I mean, Fran was telling me, you know, we get a call from a woman that said that she was in horrible grief. She couldn't conceive of how she was going to keep going on with her life because she lost a child, and the child was not baptized, and therefore the child was then condemned to hell. Yeah, you just want to cry when you hear things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure you've been trying to point out to people, and quite successfully, you know, the differences, you know, between, you know, true spirituality, you know, and religion, and I take it that you would, if I asked you, you'd probably tell me that you consider yourself to be very spiritual, but not so much religious. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely, Bob. You know, yeah. And what a lot of people don't understand is that all of the great religions were founded on psychic and mediumistic phenomena, and then all of this other stuff was just added on afterwards.
Yeah, and I think you had in today's newsletter that you sent out, there was a bit in there about one author talking about you know, Evan Alexander's new book, and that the church was not so yes, enthralled by it because it would lead one to believe that anybody could go to heaven, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look, Bob, I mean, I've had so many complaints from so many former Catholics saying, well, look, the priest told them that there's some young lady who divorced, and she said to me, he said, if I remarry, my priest said, I'll go to hell for eternity. Is it true, Victor? Please tell me. You know, I mean, they were terrified. I said, oh, Lord, don't believe that nonsense. You know, I mean, no.
Yeah.
We get our information directly from the afterlife, from the higher sources. Guaranteed, what we tell you is correct, right? The information, what you are given, was written some 2,000 years ago by people we don't even know who they were.
So you're right.
Credibility is where you get the information directly from the afterlife, because we know what's going on there. And they said, beliefs are virtually unimportant. It's what you do that would be important when you cross over.
And I think the one of the greatest values of the work that you do is that by educating people and by relating all the evidence and by the sharing of experiences, you tend, when people read it, they eliminate the, you know, the am I crazy type of response, and it opens them up to sharing their experiences. And I think that that's probably, well, I guess I should ask you that question. I mean, is that the way to change worldview, you know, by getting people to open up about what they're experiencing?
Can I come in on that one, Bob?
Because
that was one of the things that we found. Victor and I were going to a number of spiritual groups in the early days, and what we found almost universally is that they were filled with women whose husbands thought they were crazy.
Yes.
It was like a common pattern, like women were taking it. And I really think that male culture puts men at a disadvantage in terms of accessing paranormal and spirituality. Certainly it did 20 years ago. That is changing. But one of the things that one of the reasons that we wrote the book was that for people who are intuitive and having experiences, when their family members start saying, but this is not logical, this is not fact, this is not scientific, they would have something to say, well, hang on a minute, there is a scientific basis for all this. There are facts, there is reliable evidence, and it's not just woo-woo. So, yes, and we feel what we're finding, of course, is that once people open themselves to the possibility of these things happening, then they start having their experiences. And that's quite amazing. That we get emails all the time from people who say, well, since I read your book and I followed some of your suggestions on how I could have my own experience, my whole worldview has changed.
And isn't that
Yes, I agree with that. Yes, I agree with that, because my own personal experience, when people used to email me complaining that, for example, they went to their doctor, and after the operation, they tell the doctor that they had these experiences, and you know, the doctors tell them, ah, that's all in their mind, you know, don't be silly, you know. But we know now that they were near-death experiences, you know. I'm talking about 23 years ago. But
right.
these days, as you said, Bob, people are coming out in the open and are no longer afraid to tell about their experiences.
Mm. Yeah, and we've certainly noticed that in the 10 short years that we've been doing it. So I think there's great progress being made. And I'm hopeful with the work that you're doing and many other people that, you know, maybe in our lifetimes we'll really be changing worldview. And, of course, if you believe that you survive, and if you believe that the way that you in which you live your physical life affects your continued existence, and the evidence shows that it does, then you can really affect some positive change.
We know this. As I said to you before, that the credibility is when we consistently are when we receive information from the afterlife on what we have to do to cross over to the realm of the light, right? So,
yeah.
And the consistency is that conduct, how we behave on Earth, will determine what is going to happen to us when we cross over. That is very, very important. I mean, someone who is a good, average, open-minded person who helps those who come his or her way, and that's fine. And on crossing over, these people won't have any problems at all. But if you have someone who has deliberately been hurtful and has hurt people and has been cruel, I mean, no, that person is going to have some problems, and you know, he cannot go under the same realm of the light as those people who are honest and decent in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's a third level that's very, very important. That these people on Earth are basically good people. Now, they help whenever they can. They're not selfish, and they're decent people. However, they encumbered their mind believing that there is no afterlife. Now, on crossing over, that encumbered mind tells them that there's no afterlife, and these people get virtually lost.
So they'd have a body, a solid body. They'd never concede that they're dead, but they live then like in a dream state. They go back to their familiar place, like to their home, and this is where people claim to have seen ghosts. But from the afterlife, there are rescue teams who will go and will try to help these people. And many times they're successful. And these caught people between Earth and the third realm, and the realm of the light, eventually move to the realm of the light. But there is a small percentage that remains stubborn and obdurate in saying, no, there's no afterlife. I'm alive. They know things have happened, and they could remain in this mental confusion for a long, long, long time. But eventually, after eons and eons of time, because each human has the spark of the divine, sooner or later they will see the light, and gradually they will eventually make it to the realm of the light, even if it takes eons of time.
I wanted to get into, I know you both have a tremendous amount of experience with physical mediumship. It's a subject that many people are not familiar with. They're familiar with the mediums, mental mediums that they see on TV or they may have frequented. And I know that you have had the privilege of having many, many sittings. And my prior conversation with Wendy, Wendy, I remember you telling me that you weren't convinced until you went through tens of sessions. You know, you didn't go in, you went in as an open-minded skeptic, and now you're totally, convinced about the phenomena. So perhaps you can just tell our listeners a little overview about what physical mediumship is.
Okay, Bob, I'm very happy to. A physical medium produces phenomena that can be seen, heard, or felt by everyone present. It's a very, very rare form of mediumship, and that's why people haven't heard about it. The other reason is it's so difficult for people to accept and comprehend that you, in the past, people working in physical mediumship have kept it only to people who are within that circle, for example. It takes years to develop a physical medium, and it needs darkness to develop because the energies are very sensitive to light. And because it's in the darkness, a lot of people automatically say, oh, it's fraudulent because it's in the dark. Why can't we have it in the light? Well, I guess the answer to that is, why can't you have snow in Hawaii? It's because it's a physical law.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that the spirits are able to take a substance from the medium's body. It's taken from the pancreas, it's taken from the cells of the body, it's extracted from the body, and the spirits are able to use that to put it over their spirit body and reduce their vibrations. They tell us it's like putting on a wetsuit and a mask. They find it very uncomfortable. They even say that they have trouble thinking clearly and remembering because they say it's like coming out of an anesthetic. It's quite a difficult thing for the spirits to do. In the early days of physical mediumship, what you used to get were bangs and raps, and which would be in a code. If you go back to the Fox sisters and the early days of spiritualism, they used to communicate almost like with a code, like one rap for yes, two raps for no, and it was very slow and cumbersome. But gradually the spirits on the other side, and we're told that they were led by Benjamin Franklin and Swedenborg, who were the scientific team on the other side developing this. And they learned how to communicate better, and they were actually able to build a voice box out of this substance that they extracted from the medium. And they were able to produce spirit voices. So if you have a direct voice medium, you can actually, the medium will be sitting there, but you will hear a voice coming from the other side of the room. And this was what Leslie Flint was. some of the best evidence from the afterlife is on the Leslie Flint tapes. These were hundreds and hundreds of sittings where people were talking directly with their loved ones in extended conversations. If any of your listeners are really interested in afterlife evidence, I suggest that you look up the Annie Nanji tapes, N-A-N-J-I. These are about 30 tapes of a woman in the afterlife communicating through direct voice with her husband in Leslie Flint's circle. And they're absolutely stunning. But we've been in mediumship. You can see spirit lights moving around the room. When we were in Germany with Kai Muger recently, we had little spirit lights coming and sitting just in front of us, and as if it's an eye looking into our eyes. This was what the skull experiment got. The skull experiment was physical mediumship. But in the most developed form of physical mediumship, the spirit people actually materialize. They walk around the room, they touch you, they clap their hands and stamp their feet. It's pretty amazing stuff. But it's, as I said, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I've interviewed several scientists, and when the subject comes up, they insist that the phenomena is real, but it's the result of psychokinesis from the living minds and not indicative of survival.
Come on. These people have not investigated at all. I mean, we've been investigated, our medium, David Thompson, for 7 years. And we know what's going on. I mean, we're professionals. We have Wendy is a psychologist. I have scientific method also as a major. We know what's going on. We challenged a number of people, open-minded scientists, and when they attend the session afterwards, they say, "Yes, this is because I find materialization of David Thompson the greatest proof the afterlife exists." There would not be one open-minded scientist who would say, "No, it's not happening." All of them said yes.
But just to go back to your main point there, Bob, macro psychokinesis has never been demonstrated in a laboratory. The scientists say, "Oh, it could be," but if we're looking at psychokinesis as it's been investigated, the movements are so small they're not even visible. Now, it's all very well to say, "Oh, it could be from the medium's unconscious mind," but where's your evidence? There is no evidence. Psychokinesis, the best experiments with psychokinesis were done with D.D. Holm years and years ago, and he was a physical medium. Charles Tart wrote that in his recent book. He said, you know, all of the experiments with PK, with psychokinesis, they're really so small, they are statistically significant, but they are micro PK, not macro.
Right. And who's to say? I mean, if there is a such a thing as macro PK, that could be the way spirit chooses to communicate. If spirit can manifest physical movement and material objects, you call it whatever you want, it's still spirit communication.
Absolutely. And what comes through is when spirit manifests the body that they had when they were alive. Right. Now, the medium doesn't know that. We had a case in England where a spirit materialized minus the finger that he had lost when he was alive. And his granddaughter felt his hand and said, "Oh, my God, that's the finger that was missing." Now, don't tell me that that's a manifestation of the medium's mind.
Mm. Bob, look, I have to come in here because, as I said, we've been investigating David Thompson for 7 years. We're always investigating. And the thing is that in the session, when David's guide comes through, he's called William, he becomes solid. Now, we have an extra solid body in the experimental room. Now, where did that solid body come from? Sometimes there are two extra ones. And security, David, I'm sure, and
we don't mind to any skeptics getting their own people to secure the place, because I know 100% that it's real. It's what the people are becoming solid there. As a matter of fact, when my own sister materialized, we were talking about things we talked about immediately before she crossed over. Now, nobody in the session room knew what we were talking about. But my younger sister and I, you know, kept on talking about things that meant things to us. And Wendy's father, Wendy, would you like to say something to Bob about your father coming through?
Bob, we talked about this last time I was on, but yes, I'd like to confirm I'm 100% sure that my father manifested. He came and talked to me about things that nobody would know. He kissed me on the forehead. He wrote his name on a piece of paper, and nobody in that seance room would have known that name. I go back to some of the early experimenters who said, I can't believe that psychokinesis or whatever can correctly reconstitute the memories and personality of my dead relatives. As far as I'm concerned, the reunions absolutely prove it.
We witnessed over 100 reunions, Bob, and each time the materialized spirit has a conversation with the person in our meeting, in our session, they talk about things they knew, only they knew about. And we hear them talking to each other, and to me that is sensational proof that the afterlife exists.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I mean, it's one thing, I mean, if you believe in these super psi theories of as an explanation of mediumship, you know, it's one thing to have this, to imagine this vast data bank of information and to extract bits of information from that, as wild as that seems. But to, as you mentioned, like to extract the personality, how do you explain that? And to extract a bodily manifestation doesn't seem to ring true.
No. That's right.
We keep coming back to the evidence, Bob. It's easy to have a theory. Oh, they could do this. But let's see the evidence. Let's see them produce macro PK under scientific conditions. Just let them it's all speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you I think Victor answered this question in talking about David Thompson, but I was going to ask you, you know, after the decades of research, you know, what particular, you know, discipline of research or what particular body of evidence do you think is the most significant, you know, in proof of survival? So, I mean, would it be the physical mediumship, Victor?
Oh, absolutely, Bob.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because the critical thing is, you see, we know of brilliant mental mediums. They're absolutely brilliant. Some of the mediums I came across, they're so superb. But the critical thing with physical mediumship is that we end up with an extra body, physical body, in the seance room, right? And who tells us that he had to lower his vibrations to become solid, right? And he will have to increase the vibrations to go back to the where he was before in the afterlife. Now, I've challenged skeptics. And I said, look, we end up with an extra physical body. We claim that it's the spirit that uses the ectoplasm to become solid. Now, forget about your beliefs. Just, you know, identify exactly what is happening. And we have the non-aligned adjudicators, those who are able to perceive the evidence, what they see. If it's there, they say, yes, it's there. It is happening, right? But one thing, you know, Bob, the amazing thing that I came across with the closed-minded skeptics is that no matter what evidence you present, they just cannot see it. They just cannot see it. I remember when I first came on the scene, I presented my evidence, and the king of the skeptics from Florida, he said, what evidence? And I sent him the evidence. He said, what? I can't see. I can't see the evidence. And it's true that some closed-minded skeptics do not have the skills and the competence to see things that others can see. The evidence is there, but these closed-minded skeptics do not see it. And I wrote a short article, 7 points, why this is happening. You know, psychology calls it rationalization through cognitive dissonance, and then you have the neuro-linguistic programming saying more or less the same thing. And there are other reasons why these closed-minded skeptics refuse to see the evidence when the evidence to others is clearly there.
Yeah, it really is amazing to me on the, you know, I mean, our cultural and religious and societal influences are so strong. What amazes me that even when I talk to some mental mediums today, and when I bring up the subject of physical mediumship, I get negative comments, you know, they're like, yes, very skeptical. And I say to myself, wait a second, how could somebody who communicates with the dead not be open?
Yes. It's just a matter of not having had the experience or having had the exposure to it. It is a huge mental leap. But for anybody who's listening, I strongly suggest you get hold of the video on the Skoll experiment. The Skoll experiment was thoroughly investigated by scientists, some of the top scientists in the Society for Psychical Research. I think it's called the Afterlife Experiments. It's on the internet.
Yeah.
It's absolutely thoroughly researched under scientific conditions. It was an absolutely amazing evidence that came through.
Yes.
Yeah, I did watch the documentary and read much about it, and it really is. I mean, I think that you mentioned, you know, in the book that it's probably the grandest afterlife experiment that there was, and over such a long period of time, and yet people are still not aware. So I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, to read about the Skoll experiment. You know, what I wanted to ask is, you know, how does one come to that true knowledge of an afterlife? I mean, can you get to that point by reading every single, you know, book and research paper that there is out there, or ultimately does it take some personal experience to really get you there? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, oh, yes. I mean, my personal belief is that you don't have to have experienced anything to come to this true knowledge. I mean, the experiential is very powerful. This is true. But I quite accept that those people who just read the right books, it's very important to read the right books. And if they don't have the flair or the gift to have these experiences, they can talk to others who had those experiences. But I don't think that one has to experience anything to accept the true knowledge. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, I always like to give the analogy of, do you believe that Australia exists and yet you haven't been here? Well, how do you know that Australia exists? Well, obviously talking to people who've been here and talking to people who've had experiences. I don't know if you read Kenneth Ring's book. He used to teach a course on the afterlife, and he found the most thing that moved people most was listening in person to people who've had near-death experiences. Somehow, once people have had a transformative experience themselves, whether it's a near-death experience or whether it's an amazing mediumship reading, I think when people hear that firsthand, they are moved, and it somehow resonates with them that it's true. And that's where I think your conferences, Bob, are doing such a fabulous job. When people get together with other people who've had experiences, they may not have had them themselves, but somehow that vibration of knowing is transmitted.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, when we have these little discussion groups, you know, that we have throughout the country, and you yeah. know, Fran and I, you know, run one in New York, and you know, people come in and they're, you know, they're so fearful lots of times, and they're sitting on their hands and they just want to listen, and all of a sudden the light goes on, and they start opening up about these extraordinary experiences that they had and kept hidden. You know, as a psychologist, Wendy, I would imagine that's not very good for teachers that stuck inside. Right? You know, and they seem to explode with exuberance, you know, and it's a wonderful thing to watch.
That's true, yeah.
It is. It certainly is.
I know we're coming to the end of our time, but I did want to mention another area of research with that you're very familiar with, an electronic voice phenomena. And do you think that, in a sense, the people that are getting, some people seem to be able to get more spirit communications by that method than others. So I always thought of these people as mediums themselves. They're just using, you know, the tape as a means, you know. I mean, do you agree that this, yeah.
The people who are meeting all the research, especially when it comes to ITC, the successful ITC experimenters seem to be very mediumistic.
Yes, yes. I agree with that. And I had the discussions with those in your country, Bob, who look after the EVP, and those in South America and in Europe. And they all say the same thing, that some people are able to get better voices than others. And they think that they have natural gift for it, and perhaps even they may even have more ectoplasm, and this is important for the voice to go on tape.
Interesting. I know that some of the mediums, and you know, we always encourage people to have their sessions recorded when they have a session with a medium, and a lot of people are starting to report that when they go back home and they play back the tape, they're picking up little EVPs, little communications.
Lovely.
Yes.
That would be a nice area for research, you know, to do EVP, mm-hmm. you know, in medium settings and see if it increases. So. Mm-hmm. But I'm so thrilled, you know, that you have joined us today. Again, I want to tell all of our listeners, I can't emphasize enough, you need to log on to the site victorzamet.com. Not only it might take you 2 weeks to peruse the website. There's so much information there. But if you're not already a member of their newsletter community, just put in your email address. And as I mentioned, every Thursday you'll get quite an interesting email letter with news, breaking news, historical accounts, YouTube videos, and it'll make your day, get you through the next week. The book is called "The Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife." It is now, in all the stores. There's a link to it on our website, an Amazon link. We have a newsletter that's going out to about 7,000 members next week, and it'll have a review that I wrote on the book. It's a wonderful book. It has we just touched on some of the evidence, but there it goes into every discipline of research. So if you are curious and you just knew about mediums and you didn't know about the other stuff, I encourage you to pick up the book, "A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife." Victor and Wendy, thank you so much for all that you do for so many. We will continue to follow your work. I thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you'll consider joining us again real soon.
Thank you, Bob. Talking to you. Really, really great talking to you, Bob. And say hello to Fran for us, too.
Okay. Oh, I've been listening. Hello, and thank you for being with
hello,
us.
Hello, Fran.
And I'm still not convinced that Australia exists, because I've never been there. So. Take care. And I usually close the show by saying good night, but for you, it's good morning.
Lovely talking to you, Bob and Fran.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We now now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon all of the families of Moore, Oklahoma, Francis Mistracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen Lafadas, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Patillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, John Borland, Flora Prisco, Miriam Pierschka, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, and Dorothy Mello. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of love, thought, by praying like this, to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as our earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.